Today is March 13th, 2013, and this is the Apple Context Machine episode number 195, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, pocket fisherman enthusiast. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. Folks, I don't know where this stuff comes from. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM@macobserver.com.
You know, one of these days, I should learn when I'm finished saying managing editor at TMO, you're about to talk. You're about to make me laugh with whatever title you've made up. Don't pick up my glass and drink.
You would think. And true story, Jeff doesn't get to hear what my title is going to be. So, I mean, most of the time my titles are intended to make Jeff laugh. Actually, most everything I do is intended to make Jeff laugh. That's my goal in life.
And I love you for it. Thanks, man.
You are welcome. So let's see here. We have some stock related stuff to talk about this week, don't we?
Yes, we do. Yeah, and it just I think there's some stuff in the whole Apple stock world that's kind of annoying us, and we need to get it off our chest for the pleasure, amusement and entertainment of our listeners.
All right. Well, we had two different aspects we were going to talk about. We were going to talk about Apple's cash hoard.
Yes.
And we were going to talk about Peter Mizek in particular.
Right.
Which one do you want to start with?
Let's start with the cash hoard.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's
start there.
We'll talk about the mechanics then.
All right. So first, we know Apple has over $137 billion.
Yeah, and that was like a month ago. So, you know, they've got more.
Yeah, I'm assuming just from interest alone.
No, that was 2 months ago, wasn't it? Right? That was in January.
Oh, wow. And it's March now.
It's March. Yeah, we're going to get a new quarterly earnings report in April.
Yeah. Okay, so it's probably safe to say at this point, Apple has over $140 billion in cash.
Yeah, it's likely. It's likely. But whatever. The point is they've got a bunch of money.
Right. And they need to figure out what to do with it.
Right.
And shareholders want them to figure out what to do with it.
Right. And everyone is clamoring for Apple. Actually, almost everyone is clamoring for Apple to get more of it back to shareholders. Why don't we start right there? Why don't we look at, because you know a lot of our readers at the Mac Observer, they're fans of Apple, right? You know, they're
true,
and fans of Apple get protective sometimes.
Sure, and there's a lot of people out there that because of that are saying, look, this is Apple's money; they can do with it as they please. It's not our place to tell them what to do with the money.
Right. And let's and I should get my full disclosure in. I do own a very insignificant amount of Apple. I have for a long time, but it's a very tiny amount. But I do need to explain that before I start talking about the companies.
And since someone's going to ask, no, I don't have any Apple stock.
Gotcha. So the reality is, but I'm speaking today not as my I own so little it doesn't even matter. So I'm not talking today as a shareholder. I'm definitely talking as an analyst. But you're welcome to take my disclosure as you see fit. But the reality is that this is not Apple's money. It is the shareholders' money. This is true from a legal standpoint and from a practical standpoint as well.
Right. Because they are giving money to Apple through buying shares, mm-hmm. so that Apple has money to work with. Mm-hmm. And that's an investment. And you expect return on your investment. That's how it works.
And when companies make a lot of money, they tend to give dividends. And over the course of the last, I don't know, let's just call it 50 years, certainly in the last 20 or 30 years, companies that have been, especially in the tech space, companies that are growing don't do dividends. Their value tends to be looked at strictly from a growth perspective.
Like, sure.
This is especially right. true with the tech world, which has moved faster than any industry heretofore in the history of capitalism.
I just love the fact that you used heretofore and you used it correctly. Well done.
Thank you. So, in part, there's been kind of a stigma in the tech community in particular, the tech industry, I should say, for companies that do give dividends, because it's often seen as the sign of a company that, A, doesn't know what to do with its cash, that can't find ways to put that cash to work to make more money for shareholders, and in part because it's also seen as sort of a, you know, yeah, we're pretty much mature, you know, what you see is what you get, and we're no longer a growth story. So there's been this sort of stigma. But now Apple has come along, and are you ready for this?
I'm sitting down. I'm ready.
Upset the Apple cart. Because...
I'm really glad I was sitting.
Because Apple has been growing in leaps and bounds and had so much money that it had to start doing a dividend, because it got to the point where Apple had more money than it needed. A point acknowledged by Tim Cook, who said that, you know, we got more money than we need for operations.
Yes, and so once again, Apple's in a unique position in the technology market. This time, it happens to be from a financial standpoint,
right?
Because a growth company, and now they're doing dividend.
Now they're doing a dividend. And the other aspect of this is that other tech companies heretofore have used vast cash hoards to buy other companies. Right?
Yes.
They make big purchases effectively to buy new revenue streams.
Right. But that's not what Apple does.
Correct. That's not what Apple has done. Apple tends to make very small purchases. I mean, what's the biggest purchase that they've made that we know of? It was Next. You know, 1996.
You're right.
For $400 million.
You're right. Yep.
They spent $250 million on Quattro Wireless, right? No, not Quattro Wireless. Who was the company that they actually bought? Was it Quattro?
Actually, it might have been Quattro. Oh, I can't remember off the top of my head now.
I hate it when we do this. Because there were two companies. Google bought one and Apple bought the other.
Right. Yeah, the wireless companies and as soon as you said Quattro, that's what stuck in my head.
Yeah, I think Apple bought Quattro. Well, you know, I tell you what, let's just edit that out and then no one will know what idiots we are.
Perfect.
Excellent.
Brilliant.
It's a good plan. All right. So Apple bought that company for $250 million. They've bought, Tim Cook has recently said that Apple has averaged buying a company every other month for the past 3 years. So right. In the past 36 months, Apple has bought roughly 18 companies, but they're all small.
Right. And he said, was it at the shareholder meeting, that they've been hunting for another company to buy? They just can't find what they want.
I don't think that they said that. He said that they've considered buying big companies but haven't.
That's okay. That's what it was. Yes.
And so with all this money that Apple has in the bank, they don't need it. They need some of it for operations. So, like, you know, when people started whining about Wall Street started whining about Apple's cash hoard when it hit $40 billion. And at that time, I argued that you guys need to chill out, because Apple clearly is using its money for supply chain advantages. And, you know, the Apple clearly has a plan for this money. And, you know, stop the whining. When it hit $60 billion, I was like, well, all right, now we're starting to be able to make a case for it. And when it hit $100 billion, there's definitely a case for it. Apple doesn't need this much money. Apple is not going to spend $20 billion buying a big company. They're not going to spend $100 billion buying a big company.
Right.
They need tens of billions in the bank to do... Like, one of the things that Apple does is they invest in infrastructure in the supply chain.
Right.
And they will sometimes put out huge amounts of money to secure exclusive access to supply for, you know, X period of time. They'll buy equipment. They'll invent processes with their OEMs. You know, Apple, unlike every other company, is really, really involved with all these companies that they outsource to. And, you know, sometimes they own the manufacturing processes that they're actually having these third-party companies manage for them.
Right. And it shows when you look at a product like the iPad or the iPhone 5, if Apple didn't have that level of involvement, these devices wouldn't look as sharp and feel as good as they do.
Right. And Apple wouldn't be able to make as much money.
Right.
So, and from a shareholder standpoint, that's one of the things that Apple has done better than everybody is they've used their money through Tim Cook's leadership in the supply chain, plus Tim has, and I forget his name off the top of my head, but Tim has a lieutenant who has been also been a big part of their supply chain awesomeness for the past 10 years, 12 years, 15 years, whatever. They've taken this money and then they've used it to have some of the highest profit margins, gross margins on the planet. And this is one of the things that they've done with this money. But at this point, they have far more than they need to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to wonder if part of the reason they've piled up so much cash is because even though they're as big as they are, there's still the whole small company startup mentality that they work with.
Well, yeah, Apple is obscenely lean for how much revenue it brings in. I mean, you know, Apple's gross margins are in the high 30s. They were actually in the 40s, low 40s. More recently, they've been in the high 30s. That is just It's just unbelievable the kind of margins they get. The only companies that have had margins, Microsoft, a software company, has had gross margins in the 80% range because they're selling software.
Sure.
Right. You know, once the product is developed, their cost to manufacture and distribute boxes of CDs or, you know, cassettes or downloads now is just, you know, it's just absolutely nothing. But for companies that actually make physical products, no one has margins anywhere near that. I mean, 20% margins at one point were
unheard of.
Unheard of, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's part of why Wall Street valued Apple as high as it did for as long as it did. So, where were we? Money. They don't need it. They just don't need this much money. They're not gonna buy a big company. They need, I don't know, $40 billion at the most to manage the supply chain. And they've got $140 billion.
Okay, so now let's say that Apple finds a good way to feed off that extra cash. And they get down to $40 billion.
Which would be too much.
Okay, so what would be, so like 60, 80?
You know, actually, so David Einhorn, what he wanted was...
He wanted an everlasting gobstopper.
Well, he did, but that was only to bleed off future profits. He wasn't proposing that Apple empty the bank vaults. And give all the money back to the shareholders. He was actually saying his plan basically would have left Apple with its $137 billion in the bank, but would have sent almost all the future profits back to shareholders. I'm fine with that Apple having $100 billion in the bank, personally. As in this case, I'm saying that as a shareholder, but I'm also saying that as an analyst. I mean, Apple doesn't make a ton of money off its cash, but if Apple wants to keep $100 billion around, that's cool with me. But, you know, but the problem is that they're adding like $40 billion a year to that cash. So, I mean, they're adding as much cash on a yearly basis as they need to have in the bank for their operational history.
Which is crazy. Okay, so even with the dividends Apple currently has, they can't give money away as fast as they make it.
No, they really can't. That's probably accurately put. So with Apple showing and demonstrating over the years that it does not need as much money as it has, from a shareholder perspective, it is appropriate for shareholders to want to see some of that money coming back to them because it is their money.
Sure. And for most companies, when people are buying stock, they're buying it as an investment. And I said most companies because I know that there are people that are buying Apple stock because they love the company. They're not seeing it as an investment. It's just they love the company.
Yeah, that's probably a relatively small amount of the actual shares that are with outstanding.
Yeah, probably. But the point is the vast majority of people that are buying stock in Apple or any other company are buying it as an investment.
Yes.
And not as an endorsement.
Yes.
So, of course, they are expecting to see a return on that investment, and that's totally reasonable.
Yes.
And I think that Apple has historically been giving investors the cold shoulder, at least to a degree, because Apple hasn't been interested in giving any of that money back to the shareholders.
Well, Steve wasn't interested. And, of course, you know, Steve... It's funny. Steve always showed shareholders great deference in the shareholder meetings, but I'm not going to say that it was faked because it wasn't faked. But I think that once he left the shareholder meeting, that he was pretty much interested in what Steve wanted.
I think that's probably an accurate statement about every meeting he went into. in that he, when he left, all he was interested in was what he was interested in.
Yeah, that's. that's the case. I think that's the case. And that's not sure. I think that Tim certainly takes. And I'm not ever. I'm certainly not saying that Steve ever violated his fiduciary responsibilities to shareholders as both an officer and a director of the company. That's not my point either. I just, you know, Steve had an agenda. Steve used everything and everyone around him to further that agenda. And when it came to Apple, usually that agenda was to make really cool products.
Yes. And the side effect was Apple made money.
Yeah. Yeah. And Apple, yeah, Apple made money.
Which is a stark contrast to, I'll use Samsung in this example because they're big in the news right now. Samsung clearly does product design, development, and launches not based on how cool can we make a product, but what is the profit we will make on this?
Yeah, I would say that's the case. That's what motivates most companies, and that was your point.
Yes, yes. I just singled out Samsung because, well, I can.
Yeah. Yeah, and Apple's philosophy since Steve came back was that if we make great products and manage the supply chain and do our jobs correctly, the profits will fall in line. They may have used both of those terms over the years, and that's something that Tim has recently emphasized too. So
Yeah, and it's a business model that's clearly working for Apple.
Yes, because Apple's making money hand over fist, despite Wall Street's weird reaction to Apple making money hand over fist.
Well, part of the problem I see with Wall Street is that you get these analysts that, even though they can look at Apple's track record and see that what Apple does is, by and large, successful, yet they keep trying to force Apple into the same business model other companies are using, which is go for the lowest common denominator, how cheap can you make the product, and like all the talk about Apple is about to release a super cheap iPhone. And before that, it was, well, Apple has to get into the netbook market or they will fail. And
Apple has to license OS X. Listen, before we start talking about the analysts, there's one more point that we should really make about the cash.
Okay.
And that's that most of Apple's cash is offshore. Do you remember how much Apple has in the States?
No, I want to say it's actually around 40.
Yeah, 37 billion. Or 40 or something like that, right?
That sounds about right.
Most of it is offshore. And the reason why it's offshore is because were Apple to repatriate that money, the company would take a 35% tax hit on it, which is a larger, you know, it's an interesting thing. Big corporations have been lobbying for a tax holiday. There's think trillions of dollars offshore being held by companies. Certainly hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of billions, but I think it's trillions that has not been repatriated back into the States because no one wants to take the tax hit because, you know, in Apple's case, Apple brings, let's just call it $100 billion. Back to the States, and that $100 billion turns into $65 billion, and Apple's $137 billion cash hoard turns into a roughly $102 billion cash hoard, and you know that money that freaks everybody out. No one really wants to actually think about that,
right?
So it's an interesting thing. There's lots of politics involved with that. And it very much complicates Apple's ability to return money to shareholders because it can't, the shareholders are here in the States, unless the vast majority of them are here in the States, and that money can't be sent out to shareholders in the form of a larger dividend, in the form of a stock buyback, which really, you know, if I should point out that if Apple thinks that the company is undervalued right now, it should be buying back stocks hand over fist. This is a logic and math issue. And Apple has a $10 billion 3-year stock buyback program that's just way too small. I mean, that should clearly be increased, but it can't really do that very easily without bringing some of that money back on shore. And if it does that, 35% of it goes away. And so it's a really, really, really complex issue that makes all of this harder and is probably the biggest reason why Apple hasn't already been more aggressive in returning some of this money to the shareholders. And that's the thing, you know, and that's really at the heart of why I think Wall Street is pressuring the company to do this. Is because they want Apple to move faster. Apple doesn't want to move faster because they want to be able to do it right.
And clearly Wall Street has never been concerned about Apple doing it right. They just want them to do it the way they think they should.
Right. Which is a great segue back to your previous great segue.
Yes. Which leads us to the analysts that end up with all these screwy ideas about what Apple should do and what they think they are doing. And the most recent being Peter Misick.
Yep, of Jefferies and Company, right?
Yes. And he downgraded Apple, his 12-month target price for Apple, he downgraded it to, I believe, $420 this week.
Yeah. Did he issue an actual downgrade too? Did he go to like neutral or hold or sell?
Actually, it's still on hold.
I see.
So yeah, he didn't do a downgrade. So I misspoke. Wow. Yeah, but when
well,
he
other
lowered
people
his...
other people downgraded Apple last week. Other analysts downgraded
right.
Apple to various holds and whatnot.
Yeah. So he didn't downgrade, but he reduced his target price.
Right.
And he did that based on just rumors, and not just rumors, but his belief that Apple is going to miss launch dates on products that we really don't even know if they exist.
Well, we know they exist. Come on. Everybody knows another iPhone and another iPad's coming. It's just a matter of when.
Yes.
Apple hasn't said so, but come on. We know there's another iPad and another iPhone coming.
Yes, we do know that. However, we don't know that there is a cheap iPhone coming.
That we do not know.
And that's part of what his reduced target price is based on.
Right.
That Apple is going to release this cheap iPhone, and that they're going to miss the launch date that doesn't exist.
Right. The launch date that has been supposed. I think in this case it's supposed by outsiders, including Mr. Misek.
Yes.
So this is a little bit akin to the guy, I can never remember his darn name. Boy, howdy, I can never remember this guy's name. But the guy who downgraded Apple because Apple hadn't announced a netbook strategy that wouldn't cannibalize sales of the MacBook. That was like, that was the most illogical thing that I have seen come out of Wall Street ever. You know, it baffles me how one person could be so fracking stupid, because that's just stupid. It's just stupid. Are you listening to me, dude? I hope you're listening to me right now, because you're fracking stupid. I'm going to give to you the same opportunity I've given to other people. Next time you want to say something about Apple, run it by me first, and I'll let you know if it's fracking stupid. And if I say it's fracking stupid, don't say it. Boy, that
you know,
crap just pisses me off.
Don't hold back, Ryan. How do you really feel?
A little tense about this.
A little tense?
You know, I mean, the thing is, Jeff, I wrote about this a few weeks ago, right? We have a lot of stupid being written and said about Apple right now. There's just a lot of, all sorts of comments, for instance, about Apple cutting orders in the supply chain. And Tim Cook tells us, in a shareholder meeting, he tells us, when you look at any particular rumor coming out of the supply chain, you're not necessarily getting the whole picture out of that, because our supply chain is complex. I mean, he basically said, don't make too much of these things. He can't. It could be seen as a breach of all sorts of regulations and controls that that affect officers and directors of a company,
mm-hmm.
to deliberately mislead the public about your business. And considering the fact that he said this in a shareholder meeting, in a conference call with analysts in particular, I'm going to give a lot of credence to that. If Tim Cook says that these reports don't necessarily give you the big picture, I'm going to listen to that.
Yeah, that is a really bad place for him to mislead.
Yeah, he knows, for instance, that iPhone sales have just fallen off a cliff, and then he says, no, nothing to worry about here. That's going to result in a shareholder lawsuit.
Yes, and probably federal investigations.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and Tim Cook is like the master of precision with his words when it comes to what he says publicly about his company.
Yes, he is amazing like that.
Yeah.
And so when I hear Tim Cook saying something in a shareholder meeting and in an analyst conference call, I pay attention to the words. And I take them pretty much at face value, because Tim's not stupid. He knows what the ramifications are of blowing smoke up our ass, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So a couple of weeks ago, or I don't know, a month ago, whatever, sometime back, I wrote a piece that said that there's a lot of stupid things being written about Apple, being said about Apple by a lot of people right now. But the reality is that this stuff, that there's always been stupid written and said about Apple, because most people don't get Apple. They don't understand what Apple does. They don't understand Apple's value proposition. They're in a world that has been defined by Microsoft and its open licensing success, and they, you know, just have not, they don't get Apple. There were all kinds of people who were piling on, all kinds of Wall Street analysts that were piling on Apple with buy recommendations and increased target prices, who were also saying stupid things. But the reality is that it's a lot easier to ignore that sort of thing, to let the stupid go when they're right for the wrong reasons.
Sure. Yeah, so all of us were a little bit more forgiving when we had analysts giving us reports based on total fabrication, not meaning they were intentionally misleading, but rumor information that there was absolutely no basis to back it up, and we let it slide.
Well, it's not that we let it slide. We often commented on it, but it was a lot easier to not get angry and to not. You know, to some of the things we probably let go. I mean, yeah, there were some things that we let go without commentary, because there's just so much being said about Apple.
Sure.
But now it's more frustrating to everybody, because people are wrong for the wrong reason, as opposed to when they were right for the wrong reason. And I mean, nothing's changed. There's been stupid all along when it comes to Apple and outside pundits and analysts and observers. It's just right now the stock's on the way down and people are piling on and people are saying stupid things about Apple that are negative, as opposed to saying stupid things about Apple that are positive.
Now, with Apple stock going down, and of course it'll go up, it'll go down. That's what stocks do. How do you feel about the analysts that are now scrambling to downgrade and lower their target prices?
Well, it seems like it's a bit late to me. You know, I've gone on record as saying that they're analysts that I pay particular attention to that tend to get things right. Brian White, he definitely understands Apple. Sha Wu is one of the guys I respect the absolute most. There's a few other guys out there that I think really get Apple and that have done so for a long time. But you know, when Apple stock falls from $700 a share down to $420 or to $450, and then or $430, and then you issue a downgrade, you're doing it wrong.
I mean, that's pretty much after the fact.
Yeah, it's too late. Never mind the fact that Apple's fall still doesn't make much sense to me. I don't think we've seen any evidence whatsoever that Apple is running into huge problems that demand for Apple's products are falling off a cliff or anything like that. There's no evidence of that stuff. So, I don't think that Apple's stock. To me, Apple is worth more than it is right now. What's the I'm checking the.
All right. So while you're checking, I will point out that I think part of the problem we're seeing with Apple stock right now is that there are investors that are reading reports like Mr. Mizik is putting out that have wording in them that say things like that the iPhone has fallen out of favor with consumers. Apple is on the same path as BlackBerry, formerly RIM. And so Apple is growing, bringing in more money each quarter. Sales overall are increasing quarter over quarter, certainly year over year. And in comparison, you have BlackBerry, which is bleeding cash horribly and has lost market share at a ridiculous rate and is now the topic of discussions like, well, who's going to buy them, and bankruptcy, and just all of the buzzwords when people are looking at a company that they see it as in a death spiral. And we have Mizik making that comparison. And there are many investors out there that will read that, and they don't know. They're trusting the analysts to give them good interpretation of what's going on. And I would say that this is not a good interpretation of what's going on.
I would agree. I will at least give him credit for trying to say this stuff ahead of time instead of after the fact.
Sure, there is that.
I'll give him that. I mean, so Apple's PE right now is 9.72 to 1, and approximately 1.5 points, I think, is due to Apple's cash, or is accounted for by Apple's cash. So really, Apple's PE is much more of an 8 to 1. For forward earnings, and that is way low, and that to me doesn't make any sense whatsoever. That's the part that I have a real problem with the analyst who recently downgraded Apple. When you're downgrading Apple when Apple's PE is it 8, you're doing it wrong. It's just way too late. Like, let's look at Dell's PE. Dell's a special case.
Yes.
Dell's is 10.6 to 1. Amazon's is infinity to 1, because Amazon doesn't actually make money and people have valued this company at $124 billion, and that just befuddles me to no end.
But infinity, so that's good.
Yeah, they were the PE was late last year, the PE was I think 1300 to 1. They lost money, so you know now it's at an infinity one. I mean, there is some cognitive dissonance on that. Let's not make this about Amazon though. Microsoft. Let's look at Microsoft real quick.
Yeah, cognitive dissonance is a term that I have been finding myself using more and more recently with Apple related financial analysis.
Yes, you put it in an article, and you were my hero for that.
Oh, thanks.
Microsoft's PE is 15.3 to 1. Now, they also have a pretty big cash hoard, so it's lower than that, but it's still, you know, much higher. Who do you think has better prospects for the future, Microsoft or Apple? Right? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
HP is at infinity. They even though they made a lot of money last quarter, I think that didn't make up for the year. So their PE doesn't count either. But let's go Cisco. Let's look at Cisco's PE, 12.49 to 1. They have a lot of money too, but still higher than Apple's. Who's got more prospects, better prospects for the future, Apple or Cisco? Intel, you know, and Intel is definitely a mature company. Their PE is at 10.16 to 1. That's higher than Apple's. I mean, that's just crazy. That's just crazy. That's just crazy. Apple is undervalued right now. Apple is just completely and totally undervalued.
Well, it's important to remember that that a lot of financial analysts out there are doing what I said earlier, and they're trying to apply the beige box PC business model to Apple.
Yeah.
And because Apple's not doing that, they predict failure.
Right. Right. And they were, and again, they were doing some of that stuff on the way up too. It just, it was easier to ignore.
True.
It was easier to ignore. So, Peter Misek, by the way, is first rose to the attention of most people that follow Apple websites like ours with his constant beating of the drum that the Apple TV was just about to be released. And he was doing that all through 2011 and parts of 2012. And so, you know, we can see how well that worked out.
Yeah, that well, you know, now that we all have one in our living rooms. Oh, wait.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to Xiaowu's next Apple note. That guy's plugged into the supply chain. I really pay attention when he says stuff.
Yes, I'm always excited when as excited as I can be about financial analysis, I'm always excited when I see what Shaw has to say, because it's not like Peter Misek, where I'm just looking in disbelief trying to figure out where this information possibly could have come from.
Right.
I mean, with Shaw, you look at it and go, okay, this makes sense.
Right. Indeed.
It's like a breath of fresh air in the Apple analysis world.
Yeah, it is. It really is. So, I don't know. We've covered the fact that Apple does need to get this money back to shareholders. It's a complicated issue. We didn't really kind of talk about the big takeaway there. The big takeaway is that Tim Cook has been saying for about 6 months now that they're looking for the board often talks about what to do with its cash and how to get more of it back to shareholders. So I believe that we're probably going to see something soon, probably within the next 3 months. Now, Howard Ward, do you remember him?
Yes.
Gamco?
Okay, yes.
He's the guy that said in December of 2011 that Apple would announce a dividend in the first quarter of 2012. Not coincidentally, Apple announced the dividend in the first quarter of 2012. So he said on Monday, he told Bloomberg, the same place he told that he gave his comments to in 2011. On Monday, he told Bloomberg that Apple was going to announce a plan to do with this cash. He didn't say specifically a dividend, but basically Apple was going to make its plans clear by the end of April. So sometime either in March or April that Apple was going to make its plans clear for its cash.
So we are weeks away.
Probably.
Just a few weeks away. Assuming that he nailed it again.
Assuming that he nailed it again. He's not one of these guys. He's not like Doug Kass, who said the day before the shareholder meeting that a little birdie told him that Apple was going to announce a stock split. Stock goes up. He sells a bunch of stocks and then says, oh, there's probably nothing to that rumor. That's nothing to see here. I mean, you know, it's like classic pump and dump. I'll say it. I think he was pumping and dumping. That's what I think he was doing. I'm not alone in saying that, but he's been pretty aggressive with how he responds to that. So anyway, Howard Ward is not that guy.
So he's someone that we are more inclined to listen to when he offers up his speculation for Apple.
Yes. Yeah, he certainly has a track record to warrant that. And so I think that we're gonna get some kind of news from Apple. I'm guessing they're going to do more of a stock buyback, and it's probably going to be more of a stock buyback than a bigger dividend. It could be a slightly bigger dividend. Apple already gives away a ton of money as a dividend on an annual basis. They could increase that, but if they do a stock buyback, they're not beholden to that dividend going forward. So it wouldn't surprise me if we saw a little more emphasis on more of the stock buyback. Plus, that makes sense from the standpoint that the company is so undervalued right now.
All right. Well, based on your logic, I am now going with more buyback.
Yeah, I think so. And just in case it's not clear how that would help shareholders, when a company does a stock buyback, it's taking stock off the market. So it's that much more scarce, which means that the price, Apple spending $10 billion to buy back stock should at the least increase the company's market capitalization by the same $10 billion. It's the supply and demand scarcity issue. It's very, very, very simple math. It's different than you getting a check for $2.65 per share, which is what Apple is doing right now.
Right. And it doesn't change the number of shares on the market.
Yeah, it does.
When you're getting a dividend.
Oh, right, right, right. Yeah. I'm sorry. I should listen to you. Finish.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
What the hell?
Sorry. But yeah, it doesn't. Yeah. And the other one does. So I think that's what we're going to see.
Cool.
So why don't we close out on we got an interesting email this week.
We did. We got an email from Frank Strahan.
We did. And why don't you just read the email?
All right. So what he says is that he couldn't agree less with the premise that we both presented in last week's show about the positive future for Siri and Google Now. And
if I can try to channel the Grinch. No, no, no.
Yes, that's exactly what's in his email, and I bet that's exactly how he said it too, which is awesome.
Yeah, we liked it.
And he also doesn't like the idea of companies being able to track that much information about us. He says it's completely up to the consumer to choose to go to a store or restaurant, even if nearby, not the advertiser, and certainly not a search engine, just because you may have been curious about it and searched for it. And he also says that he's already deleted Google Plus from his phone because he didn't like the fact that he had no control over the location tracking that Google was doing.
Right. All very valid points and is stuff. You know, it's interesting. People talk about the Google Chromebook or the Chrome Pixel. There's a deal with the devil there, and that's that Google knows – everything you do, Google's going to know. At least with Google Now, we're getting something back.
That's true. And while I agree with Frank that it's really creepy that a company like Google can know so much about us, I think ultimately the future for Siri and for Google Now is positive because the majority of people ultimately aren't going to care enough about what's happening with their personal information to create a roadblock for either of these products.
Yeah, especially the kids who grew up with the Facebooks and the MySpaces and the Twitter tweets and the Instagrams and
right.
you know, all this stuff. There's definitely a generational difference between the people that are older than us, people in our age cadre, and the people that are younger than us too. There's a very different approach about privacy.
That's true. But that said, Frank, I totally get why you're completely uncomfortable with the whole thing.
Absolutely.
And I will go so far as to say, rightly so, because what happens with your personal information is something that should concern you.
Yep.
Very much so.
And it's very important to remember that if Google or Apple at least protects our data and tries to keep it out of the hands of the third parties. Google's whole business model is just the opposite of, you know, selling us to other parties. But if Google or even Apple has our information, that means the government can get it.
Yeah.
Not necessarily easily.
That's true.
Not necessarily without a warrant. But, you know, laws change and things can happen. And we saw what happened after 9/11 when the corporate powers, especially AT&T and the other carriers, were very, very quick to give to cooperate with the government, doing all kinds of things with intercepting our data. I mean, you know, things can change. Capital having all our personal information, to me, is no better than the government having it, and it is an area to be concerned about. So I get it.
Yes. Great. Now I'm all paranoid, and I'm going to go off to the kitchen here in the TMO Central Towers pretty soon and see if I can find the foil so I can make another hat. I hope you're happy now.
Yes, I am. My work is done. Thanks for the letter, Frank, and thanks everybody for listening. Let's leave.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening, and feel free to follow me on Twitter. That would be twitter.com/jgamut.
And you can follow me on Twitter at @tmobrian. You know, that's Brian with a Y. I'm also on Instagram these days at Geektales. You're on Instagram, aren't you?
I am. I believe I'm Jay Gamut on Instagram. I'm also Jay Gamut on app.net.
Oh, I am on the app.net too, where I'm Brian Chaffin. So I'm actually kind of all over the place. Sorry about that.
We're kind of messy that way.
Yeah.
It's okay.
And you have a fantastic blog.
You would be talking about Fresh Brew Tales.
Yes. I like Fresh Brew Tales.
All right. So thank you. And those of you that don't know what that is, I do spend a lot of time in coffee shops, and I saw so many things that I just couldn't let go that I had to start writing about them. And so I made freshbrewtales.com. And
sometimes drawing about them.
Yes. So each entry of magical, ridiculous, whatever that I experience includes a photograph or a drawing.
Which is excellent. And my personal blog is Geek Tales. So we're all over the place. So you can find us. And if you have a question, just write us. So our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. Thanks, CashFly. The bass was recorded by Boom just for us. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.